Well, good evening, everybody. Amen. Glad you're here with us tonight. Don't forget, Lee has the microphone. He's holding it up right there. So if you have a question or a comment, please raise your hand so Lee can run over there to you and get the microphone to you so that you will be heard via the internet. Okay? So just be aware of that. I'm sorry, I got a little cold. I don't know where I caught that from. But I caught it from Kathy, I'm sure. But if I wipe my nose a bunch, you'll know why. You know, yeah, I got some of that too. Yeah, we all got a little of that. That's good. We're going to be in Daniel chapter 11 is where we're going to start today. And I want you to know that as we look at this, Daniel chapter 11, we realize that Antiochus negotiated with Ptolemy. Now, what happened was that Antiochus, if y'all remember correctly, was defeated in Egypt. And so what he's trying to do is he's trying to negotiate with Ptolemy in order so that they can get more land, basically what it is, and that he would not be run out of his area. So remember, all this was for the purpose of growing his kingdom. That's what he was trying to do. They were trying to grow their kingdoms to the point that it was like it was under Alexander the Great. Now remember, it's these four generals that were under Alexander the Great that are causing great difficulties with the Jews at this time, with the Israelites. And the reason why is because Jerusalem is right smack dab in the middle of them. And so as they are coming together to fight, those people who were there in Jerusalem are suffering because they too are caught up in this battle between these generals to try to come back and establish once again the kingdom of Alexander the Great. So when Alexander the Great died, remember, his kingdom was divided into four different groups with four different generals, and all those generals were Alexander the Great's generals. Okay? So this is no different. Both tried to gain advantage. So right there, that tells you that with both of these generals, they're trying, each one of them, to gain an advantage over the other one by their negotiations. Because they're not defeating each other in war, but they're trying to defeat each other based upon their negotiations. So here they are trying to go back and forth against each other. This is what they could not gain in battle. So they're trying to gain it a different way, by negotiation. Antiochus decided not to push his advantage in Egypt. So he returns back to Syria. However, as he returned, he went by way of Judea. So what does he do? He goes by way of Judea. He goes where the Jews are. Now, notice, I want you to know and understand, he's not going there to make friends with them. He's going there for the purpose of plunder, to take away from them, to steal from them. That's his goal, is to take everything that they have. He went to Jerusalem for the purpose of looting the temple. Looting the temple. Taking everything out of the temple. Now, again, this is one of those things that we see in history quite often with dealing with the temple, that every time a foreign power comes in and takes Jerusalem, what do they like to do most? They like to raid the temple because that's where all the gold is. So they want to take all the gold out of the temple. They want to steal everything that's there. And even though when they do that, it typically brings them a bad situation. Because God doesn't just let this happen. So it typically brings them a bad situation. If you've been coming on our class on Tuesday nights, you know that when Saul was king of Jerusalem, remember the Philistines came in and stole the ark. Y'all remember that? And after the Philistines stole the ark, they got to the point of, we don't want this anymore. Because what was happening was all these plagues were coming down upon the Philistines, and so they kind of sought to dump it off on a different group. You take it. No, I don't want it. You take it, you know. And they kept going back and forth with it until they put it on the back of these cows and this chariot or this trailer, what we call a trailer today, and the cows take it back to Jerusalem. So until that happens, they're trying to get rid of it. Also, in our study of Daniel, remember what happened when they were having this big drunken party and they drank from the chalices from the temple. Remember what Daniel said? The handwriting comes out. There's writing on the wall. They call Daniel in. What does it say? And he says, your days are numbered. And tonight, this is going to happen. Well, that night, he was killed by the invading army. And so, therefore, what happened was they stole, they misused, they chastised, I guess you could say, the Spirit of God. And the Spirit of God says, no, you're not going to do this. We're not going to let you do this. Now, understand something. In the New Testament, we see Jesus gets angry. And as I've told you before, anger is not a sin if it's handled right. You can be angry. Well, good. You can be angry and not sin. Jesus got angry. When did Jesus get angry? When they misused the temple, when they defiled God, Jesus got angry over that. And not only that, when they treated other people badly, Jesus got angry over that. So realize that we can get angry, but the bottom line is be angry and don't sin. That's the bottom line. So be angry, but don't use bad language. Be angry and don't lash out at somebody. Be angry because God is being defiled. And so every time that they did something like this, every time they looted the temple, every time they go in and steal from the temple, remember, God responds. And it's never good for them when God responds in that regard. Also, remember, at this time in the temple, we have a situation where the ark is no longer there. We don't know where the ark is. We don't know what happened to the ark. But we do know that when Babylonians came and took the Jews out of Jerusalem, we do not hear about the ark being in the temple any longer. So we don't know what happened to it. By the time Jesus walked this earth, the ark had been long gone. The ark had been long gone. We don't know where it is. Some people still say, you know, it's in a warehouse in Washington, D.C. because Indiana Jones took it there. But realize we don't know where it is. And we don't know that it exists anymore. And as I told you, that I believe that probably what happened to it was that they melted it down and stole all the gold. That's what I believe probably happened to it. May not be right, may be right. But the bottom line is on all this is that every time they defile God and defile the temple, God responds. And it's usually not good for them when God responds. Okay. Let's look at verse 28, 27 and 28 of Daniel chapter 11 as we begin our study tonight. Daniel chapter 11, verses 27 and 28. As for both kings, Antiochus and Ptolemy, their hearts will be intent on evil. So Daniel says this in verse 27, he's telling us point blank that their desire to negotiate is not a good negotiation. It is evil that they're trying to do. This, their purpose is to gain power, to gain control, to gain authority, to gain land. That's their purpose. So they're going into this negotiation not in good faith at all. But they're going in rather thinking, what can we get out of this? Okay? What can we get out of this? So it says their hearts will be intent on evil, and they will speak lies to each other at the same table. So they're not going to tell each other the truth. How do you think this negotiations are going to go? If their intention is to get out of it whatever they can get out of it, and they're willing to lie their way out of it, this is not going to go well. These negotiations are not going to happen well. So it says, they will speak lies to each other at the same table. But it will not succeed. Notice how Daniel tells them, this is not going to succeed, this is not going to work. Because the end is still to come at the appointed time. Their end is going to come at the appointed time. Their negotiations are not going to succeed. This is not going to work. Their intent is nothing but evil, so therefore it cannot work. Verse 28. Then he will return to his land with much plunder. Now what he's saying right there is quite simply this, that he's going to go through, he's going to plunder the temple, he's going to take everything he can and go back to Syria. That's what he's saying. So he'll return back to Syria with much plunder. But his heart will be set against the Holy Covenant. And he will act and then return to his own land. All right, any questions or comments about that? Your version says he will do damage. Okay, y'all got New King James? Yeah. He will do damage. Okay? That works. That works. All right. Now, I want to show you some of Josephus' writings about this event. And the reason why I want to show you some of Josephus' writings is because, remember, Josephus is the Jewish historian that lived during the time of Jesus? And Josephus writes about these events that took place. Antiochus had no just cause for that ravage in our temple. Now remember, Josephus was a Jew. He had no just cause to come and plunder the temple that he made. He only came to it when he wanted money without declaring himself our enemy, and attacked us while we were his associates and friends. Remember, what did it say? That he would lie to them at their own table. He will say, you are my friend, you are my associate, and when their back was turned, what would he do? He went and plundered the temple. Okay? Yes, ma'am.
So when Zedekiah, maybe, I'm real bad with names.
Okay.
When he came back and rebuilt the temple, then that guy came and redestroyed it, and that's why it was destroyed when till Herod rebuilt
it. That's right.
He actually did do some progress on rebuilding it, but
that is correct.
Wasn't able to complete because that guy trashed it again.
That is correct. It does. This is actually the second time the temple was built, if I'm not incorrect on that. This is actually the second time, but then there's the third time under Herod the Great, when Herod the Great tried to rebuild the temple, the third time. And that's when Jesus told them, said, not one stone will be left on top of another. That's when that happened, okay? So if I'm not mistaken, I do believe it was the third time. Is that right, John? The third time that the temple was built was under Herod. Was under Herod the Great. Okay? All right. Antiochus broke his league with the Jews. In other words, he broke his agreement with the Jews and despoiled their temple when it was full of gold and silver. So what was his intent? To steal everything they've got. Gold, silver, whatever he could take. Now, this is Josephus writing about this. So we know that Daniel's writings correlate with Josephus' writings, or Josephus correlates with Daniel in saying that these things did occur. These things did happen. So we have historical records of these things happening as well as biblical records of these things happening. And under no circumstance could you sit back and you could say, well, they didn't happen, because they did. They absolutely did. Now, this is that last part there is where this comes from, and it's Josephus's writings there. Okay. Now, looking at Daniel chapter 11, verse 29 through 35. Okay. Now, this deals with the persecution that happens after this event. And it's Antiochus again, from Syria. The angel announced to Daniel. Now remember, I told you this angel was probably Gabriel. We don't know for sure, but more than likely that's who we're talking about. So the angel announced to Daniel, but this last time it will not turn out the way it did before. It's not going to be the same as it was before. That's in chapter 11, verse 29. This time it's going to be different. When Antiochus waged war against Egypt, yet again, remember, that's one of the things that he continued to do. He continued to wage war against Egypt for the purpose of taking over the land, taking over the wealth of Egypt. He wanted it himself, that kingdom. Ptolemy was not fired up about that idea. And so he fought against him. Now, when Antiochus waged war against Egypt yet again, on the verge of another conquest, the Romans interfered. Now, this is the first time that we see the Romans interfering, the Romans getting involved. This is the first time. Now remember, remember the statue that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed, his dream about the statue? Who was the head? Y'all remember? It was Nebuchadnezzar. Then the second part, which was the upper torso, who was that? Medes and Persians. Then the legs were what? The Greeks. And then after the Greeks came who? The Romans. The Romans were the feet. But remember also that there was another part at the bottom of that statue. And it was the rock. And that rock was the kingdom of heaven, but shall not be moved, shall not be destroyed. So what we see here, this is the first time that we see the Romans getting involved in these battles that are taking place. Rome eventually overthrows all of them. Rome eventually overthrows all of them, leaving them as broken apart. Rome eventually takes all that land, all of it. But remember, one of the major factors about the legs or the feet in that statue, what was it made of?
Clay.
Iron and clay. And the iron and clay could not what? They couldn't mix together. So they end up breaking apart. So in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, remember, that was the statue. That was the statue. And so you need to realize that the Romans, right here in this part, they're coming in. They're getting involved. Where they were not involved before, but now they are. And Rome sees a weakness in these divisions of the Alexander the Great's generals. Rome sees it, and they take advantage of it. Okay? Their navy, the Roman navy, positioned itself at the mouth of the Nile. Now think about where the Nile is. Think about the mouth of the Nile. It flows right into the Mediterranean Sea. By them positioning themselves at the mouth of the Nile, what are they doing? Very good. They're setting up a blockade. They're not letting anything in or out. And by doing that, it cuts off all their trade, all their wealth, all their abilities to make war by shutting down their abilities to go out into the Mediterranean Sea and trade with others and bring in more wealth so that they can continue their battle. Rome was very good at their navy, at their military. They knew how to use things. And because of where Rome is located, realize that they had a very powerful, the most powerful navy in the world at that time. Nobody could go against them. They had a lot of coastline on both sides of that boot. There's a lot of coastline there. And so, and their big thing was, Roman's big thing was trade. So they traded all over the world at that time. And they traded through the Mediterranean. Well, if you cut off those trade routes, then you cut off their supply routes. And so that's exactly what they did. So they positioned themselves at the mouth of the Nile, and Antiochus was forced to withdraw from Egypt. Why? Because they couldn't get supplies. That's why. Like I said, don't ever think that Rome wasn't smart in what they did. They were brilliant in their military. They knew how to control things. They controlled the entire Mediterranean. And that's what made them incredibly strong, to the point of, at the time of the writing of Revelation, nobody thought that they could overcome the power of Rome. And folks, nobody could. But God could, and God did. Okay? Something we should understand there. Sorry. I'd run and catch it, but I can't run that fast. Okay. Antiochus acted as a spoiled child. I didn't get my way. I didn't get what I wanted. And so what does he do? He takes it out on the dog. That's right. He takes it out on the Jews. That's what he does. It's like, you know, you go home at night and your dog's, you had a rough day at work and here comes the dog and you kick the dog. Well, What they're doing here, not saying that the Jews were dogs by any stretch of the imagination, so don't say that. But what I am saying is this, that he took it out on people that were weaker. And so by taking it out on people that were weaker, he inflicts great harm to those people. Does that make sense to everybody? So he acts like a spoiled little child. I didn't get my way. I didn't get my toy that I wanted. And so therefore, I'm going to break everybody else's toy. So you see how that works. He assaulted Jerusalem, killing some 40,000 people and capturing many more, sending them into slavery. I know. I'm about to sneeze, but if I sneeze, I'm going to sneeze about five times. So there you go. I bet, yeah, Marilyn, I'm going to go right there. Yeah. Okay. After this, he erected an altar to who? Zeus. Who is Zeus? Okay. He's the head Greek god. Okay, remember, these people are Greeks. Remember, these people were under Alexander the Great. So what does he do? He builds a temple to Zeus in the temple of God and sacrifices what? A pig. Making the altar and the temple unclean. If there was anything that he could have done worse to the temple, I don't know what it would have been. A human, yeah, that's right. Possibly a human sacrifice would have been worse. But realize that what does he do? He builds an altar to a false god, and on top of that, he sacrifices a pig on the altar. Now again, that is as unclean as it possibly could have been. John, you got something?
Oh, I was just going to say, he kept being defeated.
Uh-huh.
And for a king, that's not good in this kingdom.
That's right.
And he would have faced a lot of problems going back, if not a final problem. So this is his way of saying, I'm still strong.
Yeah, that's right.
Look what I can do.
Yeah.
And I bring home the booty and, you know, all those things.
That's right.
So you can see from a human standpoint what he's doing.
Uh-huh.
And then he just gets worse.
Yeah.
He just decides, you know, I'm just going to do everything.
Yeah. He's assassinated 40,000 people. He's taken many more than that into captivity to make them slaves. And he defiles the temple of God in every way that he can defile him. And in that regard, looking at it from a human standpoint, he's putting himself above God. Look what I've done. I can do this. And God can't do anything about it. I'm putting myself above God. The desecration of the temple is referred to as the abomination of desolation. We see that in Daniel 11:31, Daniel 9:27, Daniel 12:11, but we also see it in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. Now there are many that apply that to the second coming of Christ. No. This is very specific this happened to desolate the temple. This is very specific here. We've got, as I showed you with Josephus, we've got historical writings, we've got the writings of the Bible, everything to prove that these things did happen. And so as we're looking at this, realize when it says abomination of desolation, he's not talking about Jerusalem today. He was talking about Jerusalem then. He was talking about the temple then. He's very specific. And so what Antiochus does is he goes and he defiles the temple the best way he knows how to defile it. And in doing so, he's saying, look, I'm better than God. Now remember, like I said just a minute ago, this never works out well for these people. It never does. If you stand against God, you're going to fall. You're going to fall. Now, one thing that God does, and one thing that we need to understand about God, is God is very patient with us. He's a lot more patient than you would be or I would be. But God is very patient with us in that He gives them plenty of chances to repent. But when they don't, He comes back on top of them. God will win, regardless. The victory is in God. The history of the Jews is interwoven throughout this prophecy. Their territory lie between the two warring empires. Every time one invaded the other, their armies passed through Israel. That's the only way they could get to, if you know maps, from Syria to Egypt, Jerusalem's right smack dab in the middle. And so they have to go through Jerusalem to get there. God always leaves Himself a remnant of people who are faithful to Him. Regardless of what takes place, those who are faithful to God will be protected. Yes, sir.
It's kind of a bad place to be when you've got a king that's been thrashed and he's coming home with his tail between his legs and he's trying to save a little face. So I'll just stop here and whoop on the Jews and take over their deal.
I'm going to beat up on somebody that's not as strong as I am, and then here we go. And again, that's one of those situations where you sit back and say, okay, look, I did this. God can't stop me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to defile the temple. I'm going to defile God. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. But remember, God always leaves Himself a remnant of people who are faithful. There were always, in the Old Testament history, a remnant of Jewish people who remained faithful. And those people were always protected. Those people did suffer. I'm not saying they didn't suffer, because they did. But what I am saying is that all of those people found salvation through God. All of them. So it's not different than it is today. If we were under the same situation and we were suffering ourselves, realize those who remain faithful will be taken care of. We will be taken care of. So remain faithful. Bottom line. In this situation, some faithful Jews would be persecuted to death. Like I said, I'm not saying they were not persecuted. I'm not saying they were not, they weren't put to death, that they weren't killed, that they weren't injured, that they weren't put into slavery. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying, though, is that God takes care of His own. And regardless of what happens here on this earth, God will take care of us as long as we remain faithful. However, the angel told Daniel that the appointed time was still to come. That's in 1135. The appointed time was still to come. Okay? All right, let's look at verses 29 through 35. Starting with Daniel 11, verse 29. At the appointed time, he will return and come into the south. But this last time, it will not turn out the way it did before. So there is, right there in verse 29, there is some hope that's given to Daniel. That this isn't going to turn out the way it did before. God's going to take care of this. For ships of Kitman will come against him. Therefore, he will withdraw in fear and will return and curse the holy covenant and take action. So he will come back and pay attention to those who abandon the holy covenant. What happens? He's going to come back through. Forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice. And they will set up the abomination of desolation. This is very specific dealing with the temple and what he does to the temple. Very specific here. And by smooth words, he will turn the godlessness, those who act wickedly, toward the covenant. But the people who know their God will be strong and they will take action. And those who have insight among the people will give understanding to many. Yet they will fall by the sword and by flame, by captive and by plunder for many days. So he's not saying that the ones who stand up against him are not going to have any kind of bad things happen. Matter of fact, he's saying just exactly the opposite. If you stand against this, realize that there's going to be some bad things happen to you. So verse 34. Now when they fall, they will be granted a little help, and many will join with them in hypocrisy. And some of those who have insight will fall to refine, purge, and cleanse them until the end time, because it is still to come at the appointed time. It is still yet to come at the appointed time. Now remember, I've told you this before, but hold fast to it. God never does things on our time. God does things on His time. But His time is always on time. Don't ever forget that. Because that's important for us to know, it's important for us to realize. Yes, we want things today. God says, no, it's not time yet. You'll get this, but it's not time yet. And so the angel is telling Daniel, realize that the time is still yet to come. The time is still yet to come. Questions, comments? Right up here. Joe.
Now when they fall. They will be granted a little help. Is that the Jews?
That's talking about the Jews that were faithful, who stood against him.
And they will be joined with...
They will be granted a little help.
With who in hypocrisy?
Well, that's a good question.
It seems like there's a whole something going on there that don't know what we're talking
about. Don't know exactly. And I don't know exactly where that is. I couldn't tell you. But what I assume that what he's talking about is even those who have stood with Antiochus will rise up against Antiochus. Yeah, because they stood in hypocrisy with Antiochus. That's how I see it. And I may not be right on that. Okay? All right. Anything else? Okay. We'll be talking some more about Antiochus next time we get together. Got one right here? Yes?
I read that 34 in a different translation.
Sure. Go ahead.
I think it may be a little bit more clear.
Sure. Go ahead.
It says, this NLT, it says, during these persecutions, little help will arrive, and many who join them will not be sincere.
Okay. Yeah, that does help. That's a little better understanding translation. They won't be sincere in their help. That they'll still be kind of, nah, I don't know about this. Intrigue. Yeah, but they won't be sincere in their help that they give. They will give a little help, but they won't be sincere about it. And they will fall also. Now, one of the things that's human nature, we were talking about human nature a minute ago, John, was, you know, one thing with human nature is a lot of times people will wait to see, okay, are you going to win? If you're going to win, I'm going to get on your side. Yeah, but if you don't win, I'm not going your way. I'm not going to be on your side. That may be what he's talking about right there. That they're kind of coming in thinking, well, if things are going well, we'll stay with you, but if things don't go well, we're going to back off. Don't know. Yeah, yeah. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, yeah. Yeah. That doesn't work real well either, because you're always looking over your back toward your enemy as well. All right. Anything else? Good. All right. We're going to still be talking about Antiochus here in Daniel chapter 11, verses 36 through 39. We'll be finishing Daniel probably in the next few months. And when we do, we're going to go right on into Hebrews, the book of Hebrews, after we get done with Daniel on Sunday night. Okay? Hebrews is a good book. It's a real good book. Real good book. And you'll learn a lot about the old traditions, because the old traditions of the Old Testament is brought up greatly in Hebrews. And in the book of Hebrews, what you have, Lee, right over here, what you have with the Hebrews is the writer is saying, okay, this is what you did under the Old Testament. Here's the new. Which one's better? And the new is definitely better. Yes?
Does that say self-deification?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's what that says. You're welcome. Anybody else? All right. We'll pick up right there next time, next week. I hope you'll come back and be with us again next week. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Is there anyone here who needs to partake of the Lord's Supper? We got one? We do have one. Okay. All right. Rendell, if you'll take them back. All right. Okie doke. All right. Let's stand and sing our closing song, and then our closing prayer will be Brother Dick.